Recruiting Trailblazers is now brought to you by Recruiter.com, the hiring platform with the world's largest network of recruiters. Recruiter.com helps employers to recruit talent faster with virtual teams of recruiters, AI candidate matching, and now Recruiter.com video. Recruiter.com video can help shorten your average recruiting process by a week so you can slash your time to hire without slashing your quality of hire. Visit video.recruiter.com and enter code RECRUITER1000. That's RECRUITER with a capital R and the number 1000 to access the RECRUITER.com video beta program for free. Again, that's video.recruiter.com and enter code RECRUITER1000. And thank you to RECRUITER.com for sponsoring this podcast. Coming to you from Silicon Valley, I'm Marcus Edwards and I'm on the hunt for recruiting leaders, producers, innovators, and pioneers who've made their mark on the industry and can't wait to share their points of view. We'll tackle the tough topics and dig deep to find the answers you're looking for and some actionable advice you can take to the bank. So stick around and stay tuned, and welcome to Recruiting Trailblazers. So I'm very excited to welcome my guest to Recruiting Trailblazers today. Vanessa Rath is a global talent sourcing trainer, an international keynote speaker, a career brand specialist and coach. Vanessa holds a teaching degree and spent 8 years as a teacher in the United Kingdom. She now combines her passion for teaching and recruitment in order to offer much needed sourcing training to the South African recruitment industry. Oh, and by the way, she's also an incredible wildlife photographer and just got back from a trip from the African bush. I saw some of the photographs and they are spectacular. So welcome to Recruiting Trailblazers. Vanessa Rath, how are you?
Thanks, Marcus. Excellent. What an intro. Thank you so much. I'm so glad that you mentioned the wildlife photography because that's my passion. So thank you so much.
You're absolutely welcome. Yeah. I mean, I was blown away by those photos. Rhinoceros. I don't know whether you pluralize that. Yeah. Giraffes, or is it giraffe? Elephants?
Giraffes, yes. Yeah, you're pretty much going through the big five. Yeah, I'm very fortunate to live in South Africa. We do, right on the doorstep. Well, not really. It's a five-hour drive away. We've got the most wonderful animals that, it's just such a passion of mine to get into the bush and share my photos to encourage more people to visit our country, which is just an amazing place to be.
Yeah, absolutely beautiful. And I'll put a link to your photos in the show notes as well, if anybody wants to see.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
So let's get stuck in. You are a global talent sourcing trainer.
I am indeed.
So what's your definition of a sourcer or a talent sourcer?
Well, it's actually interesting that you ask that because I was actually filling in a survey for one of your previous guests, Mark Cohen, this morning about the sourcer, where they fit into the whole recruitment process. But in my humble definition, for me, a sourcer is someone who, they have to be able to do three things. So the first thing is that a sourcer has to have a good online brand because it's so much easier when talent comes knocking on your door. The second thing a sourcer does, and this is probably the most crucial thing, is that they are brilliant at identifying talent. And that's from anywhere. It could be from conferences, from in-person events, on the internet, on social media platforms, wherever it may be. And the third thing is that a good sourcer is a wordsmith. So it's someone who can craft an outreach message to passive talent that's going to elicit a response from the candidate who potentially didn't even know they were on the market until you contacted them. So a sourcer for me is that beginning part of recruitment. It's building that talent pipeline, building communities. That's the way that I like to think of sourcing. So in other words, in my opinion, the exciting part of recruitment.
Excellent. That's a very succinct definition. Online branding, identification and messaging. We're actually going to break out into a deeper conversation about online branding a little bit later. Breaking it down, recruiting and sourcing have sort of split and become different skill sets, and they're not necessarily complementary. Would you agree with that at all?
I absolutely agree with you. And that's actually a big reason why in 2019, I actually left a job that I was in and I actually started my own business because I realized that sourcing was a thing elsewhere in the world. So I saw in the US people having talent acquisition teams, which were made up of a sourcing team and a recruitment team. And then it started happening in Europe. And It was just amazing because in 2019, I went to my first sourcing conference, which was the first European SourceCon, which was held in the beautiful city of Budapest. And I kind of realized that sourcing was a thing, but sourcing wasn't a thing in South Africa. So what I wanted to do, and again, the big reason why I went on my own, was I wanted to raise the awareness of sourcing in South Africa and Africa, because I didn't want us to be falling behind how other talent acquisition teams were being structured. So I agree with you. They almost become like two completely different roles. For me, the way that I look at it is that sourcing is the, as mentioned, the identifying of talent and all of that. And recruiters are your good relationship builders. So they're going to hold relationships with the client, hiring managers. They're going to guide the candidates through the recruitment process. Very good at admin, very good at following processes. And I think that they are definitely complementary, because you're not going to get a successful standalone sourcer if the recruiter doesn't fulfill their part of the bargain, and vice versa.
Right.
So I think that if you can get a good team of people, and you'll notice, even if you don't have, if you've got someone sitting in a 360 recruitment position, often they're going to have an affinity either way. So either they're going to love the relationship building of, you know, managing the candidate, closing the deal, working with the client, or else they're going to love the whole finding of the talent and, I don't know, finding that like one-eyed rocket scientist or purple unicorn or whatever you want to call it. And that for me is always a good sign that actually maybe I should be splitting my team and let people work on the parts of the recruitment process that they actually enjoy doing. It makes sense.
No, absolutely. And what I meant by that was, for example, me as a recruiter, I was always pretty good at the relationship building and beyond.
Yeah.
By the way, I'd argue that most recruiters are not very good at admin, but I was always pretty good at the relationship stuff. And then beyond that, and then sort of presentation and dealing with the client from an agency perspective, and then closing the candidate, et cetera, making sure it was a perfect match for everybody, win-win situation. But what I wasn't particularly good at was the sort of the analytical side of the job, which is going out and, you know, identifying the right candidates and then putting together an effective outreach program, et cetera.
Yeah.
I've always been somebody who likes to personalize every single message. It's very labor intensive.
It is, yeah.
When you get to that side of the equation, and very analytical and very research heavy. And I'd argue that they are, in fact, two very different people.
Yes, I agree with you.
And a great sourcer is not necessarily a great recruiter, and vice versa.
Absolutely. So, and I completely agree with you, because I'm the other side of the coin. So rather give me the challenge of finding someone that nobody else can find. Let me identify a couple of candidates. Let me get in touch with them. Let me persuade them to have a conversation with me. But after that, taking the candidate through the rest of the recruitment process, I don't know. I think I'd rather be pulling up my toenails, because that's boring.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's so funny.
Exactly.
I feel it completely the opposite.
Yeah, and that is why in a standard like talent acquisition or recruitment team, you're going to find people who have their preferences. And people don't realize it, because especially in the South African context, and I'm discovering in other global companies, is that people don't realize that you can just be a standalone sourcer. So they just do the full 360. I mean, I was a terrible 360 recruiter. I didn't have much processes. There was paperwork all over the place, because it wasn't my interest. It wasn't my passion. But give me a challenge and you would lose me for hours on end doing online research.
Yeah, I see the two skills sort of diverging a lot, both in-house and in agencies. And I think the future looks very rosy for identifying those two skill sets as separate skill sets and separate career paths as well.
Yeah.
When you're teaching sourcers, where does one job end and the other begin? Because you talked about messaging.
Yeah.
Does a sourcer, under your definition, ever actually have a first conversation with a candidate?
So for me, this is a very much a gray area, and I kind of follow my client's lead on this. So I also work as a freelance sourcer. So that's when people are battling to fill roles, they contact me and they say, please, will you go and have a look and see what's out there in the market? And then a question that I always ask is, where do you want me to stop in this process? So in my opinion, if there's an internal talent acquisition team sitting within the company, surely it's better if I supply them with a list with contact details of candidates and they do the reach out. Because then it's not someone from an agency reaching out to the candidate, it's someone from the internal recruitment team, which sometimes works better from the candidate's perspective. But then there are some companies that say, no, actually, I don't want my talent acquisition team involved at all. Please, can you reach out, have the initial contact with the candidate, do a phone screening, and then send me the good candidates.
Yeah, those are two very different services.
Exactly.
I mean, the first you talked about is top of the funnel.
Yeah.
And the second one is almost, it's not 360, but it's about 270, isn't it?
Yeah, maybe 260. Yeah, no, I agree with you completely. But it's kind of like, and this is where the, you know, my client's definition of sourcing might potentially differ from my own. So it's something that I always have to clarify.
No, I think the industry of sort of top of the funnel sourcing is growing globally right now.
Yeah.
Because I think it's something that a lot of really good recruiters don't want to do. But if you present them with a pre-researched list of people who they either need to reach out to or whom have already been reached out to, that saves an enormous amount of time. So it's becoming a very effective and impactful service globally, I think.
Absolutely. And then the thing is that, you know, how much I have to do and how involved I get in the process determines my deliverables and my delivery time. So obviously, if I'm reaching out, it's going to take longer.
Yeah.
And it's more than likely going to incur a greater cost.
Which do you prefer?
You know what? To be honest with you, I don't really mind. I don't mind doing either. I do feel that sometimes it's better for an internal talent acquisition team to reach out because they're part of the company, they know the company, they can sell the role, they've met with a hiring manager. Those are not normally privileges as like a third-party specialist recruiter that I'm privy to. So they're going to do a much better selling job.
Unless you sort of position yourself as an RPO where perhaps they give you an email address.
Yes, absolutely. And you know what? I would love to do that. But getting involved at that level is, I may as well go back into full-time recruitment. I much prefer the freelancing consultant side of things because I get to do so many different things in my day, which is great.
Yeah. And we're going to focus on your training as well today. So I know something that you're very passionate about is the importance of learning how to source properly.
Absolutely.
And you talked about those three things, online branding, identification, and messaging. And actually, we're going to talk a bit more about online branding, not just your LinkedIn profile, but what you can do proactively to build an online brand in a short while. But when we get to the identification piece of sourcing, is LinkedIn Recruiter still the most effective weapon in a good source's sort of research and outreach arsenal? Or are there other strategies and tools, et cetera, that you advise people to use?
So Marcus, I'll be honest with you. You know, having cut my teeth in the recruitment and sourcing industry in South Africa, something like a LinkedIn recruiter license is something that's really expensive when you convert it to South African rand. Okay, so it's not something that a lot of South African recruiters have access to unless they are an internal recruiter sitting in a big corporate company who's got half a million rand to spend on LinkedIn for a annual subscription. Okay, so it's not really anything that's ever featured on my radar. So for me, don't give me LinkedIn Recruiter, but what I love to do is I love to train people how to go and do an X-ray search from Google back into the LinkedIn platform. Because, you know, that Boolean search string is dynamic. You can change it. You can add to it. You get a great set of results. And to pay that extra amount for using a LinkedIn recruiter, I'm not too sure whether it's worth it. But to be honest with you, having never used it, I don't know whether there's something that I'm missing. But I do know that I have trained companies from a global perspective who have looked at my training and what I've trained them on and have turned around and said, well, there's no use paying for these really expensive tools that we're using. So for me, instead of paying for something like LinkedIn, I would maybe rather pay for a sourcing software.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think LinkedIn are probably afraid of that a little bit, but doing X-ray searches and Boolean searches just through Google is, again, it's a lot more labor intensive. LinkedIn Recruiter is a platform. I'm not promoting LinkedIn Recruiter here. I've used it effectively myself for many years.
Yeah.
But I've always thought it's extremely expensive for what it is. It just makes the process of finding and reaching out to people who are not in your network a lot easier. Now, the flip side of that is that I feel that LinkedIn Recruiter and the in-mail approach is getting a bit stale.
Absolutely.
Because I don't think people are reading their in-mail as closely as they used to. They're not quite as flattered as they used to be because, you know, good people in all areas of industry and commerce are being approached all the time by recruiters these days, yeah. even sort of during the COVID economy. And so eventually it all becomes just noise.
Absolutely.
Now, we'll talk a bit about messaging, if you like, because I've always believed, and there are many ways that I've investigated through this podcast of personalizing to a certain extent. You can personalize outreach at scale if you do proper segmentation. But I'm actually a firm believer in writing everybody a personal message, because if you really want to get hold of somebody, you have to prove to them that you've identified them and them alone for a very sort of important conversation that you want to have.
Absolutely.
And that you've identified them as a unique candidate. And so you need to cite some of their experience, the reasons that you want to have a conversation with them, and talk specifically about the opportunity that you may be about to present. Do you agree with that?
I do. Absolutely, Marcus. We're completely on the same page there. To the point that, you know, within my training, I've actually developed an entire third day of training that just talks to messaging, because things like your subject line, people don't put a lot of emphasis on that, you know, that it's so important to grab someone's attention up front. And just going back to what you were saying about in-mails, my theory on it is, and I don't want to knock LinkedIn. It's an important part of the recruitment or sourcing process. It just shouldn't be your start and your end points. I'm not a big fan of in-mails. I completely agree with you. I don't believe that people read them anymore. And I think a big reason to do with this is that there's now other options for people. So, you know, back 17 years ago, 18 years ago now, when LinkedIn was launched, it was the first social media platform. I mean, it's been around longer than Facebook has. But now people have got options. So if you're a tech professional, why don't you go to GitHub? Because there you can load your code, you can learn from other developers. Or if you're on the creative side, you know, you're looking at working in the UI, the UX space, graphic design, architecture, why wouldn't you go to Behance? So there's better platforms where you're getting communities of people that potentially wouldn't want to be on a LinkedIn. It's not their vibe. It's not where their herd is. And I think that's what
true.
We need to realize is that LinkedIn, not that it has served its purpose. I believe it's still serving its purpose for like your top finance candidates, but not everyone has to be there anymore because there's options.
And if you're on LinkedIn, that means you want to be found. And I think more and more people, and this is anecdotal, I've got no data on this whatsoever to prove it, but I've heard that more and more people are sort of hiding. They might keep a profile on LinkedIn, but they're not spending any time on it, updating it, or making it easy for recruiters to find them. Because that's the definition of a true passive candidate, is somebody who's not interested, not looking. But, you know, if you're a really good recruiter and you find them and you speak very personally to that person, you've still got a chance of activating them and having that initial conversation, which is the most important part of the recruiting process, is that opportunity to have that singular conversation that could be a game changer, right?
But also what I'm finding is that there's a lot of people that I'm finding on the other platforms who actually aren't on LinkedIn because it's not their preferred platform anymore. And I think that that's something that we also need to be cognizant of, is that not everyone these days goes and opens a LinkedIn profile because it doesn't suit their needs. And when I talk about things like, you know, starting and ending your search process in LinkedIn itself, I'm not saying that it's a horrible platform, but I always recommend to people that don't reach out to anyone if you've only seen their LinkedIn platform. You need to get a holistic view of the candidate. So what can you learn from their Facebook or their Twitter or running a Google search of them? Because that's going to help you to personalize that outreach a little bit more. And I'm not talking about like now being creepy and saying, you know, happy birthday to your child. I see that we had, you know, their fifth birthday party on the weekend. That's not what I'm saying at all. But I'm saying get an understanding of the candidate, because a big part of recruitment and sourcing these days is actually getting that culture fit right. And you can pick up a lot about whether someone's going to be a culture fit by looking at all of the platforms, as opposed to just LinkedIn, where everyone's putting their best foot forward.
Yeah, but do you think sources in general, what you're suggesting is a very research and analytical heavy approach, which sounds like it delivers extremely good results. What percentage of sources do you think are prepared to go the extra mile?
I think it's got a lot to do with how sources are incentivized. You know, if you're incentivizing your sources on, you know, ratios of successful placement or successful outreach to getting a response from passive talent, and it's really going to have an impact on them, they are going to do the extra research, because all of these things are going to help them to convert that person into a placement. So I'm not under any illusion that people sit on my training for either 2 days or 3 days and they're a changed person, and the following week they don't revert back to their old lazy ways of only using LinkedIn. Like, I understand it. But I do get that there is a certain portion of the people that I train that do see the bigger picture and do go and use all of these different search methodologies that I train, all the new sites that I train them on, et cetera, et cetera. It comes down to the individual.
Would you say that that's the biggest takeaway from your training? The epiphany that there is so much life as a sourcer beyond LinkedIn?
Absolutely. And I really hope that it is. And what I often say is that my training is not just about talent sourcing training. It's about, I want people to change their mindsets. Because it's no good these days recruiting the way we did 15 years ago when I started in the industry. It's, you know, you can't go to a job board, post an advert, go through ad response and throw a whole lot of CVs in front of the client. I mean, those days are gone. People need to realize that we're changing our mindset. It's all about going after passive talent. It's about building communities of talents or talent pools, whatever you want to call them. And it's about you as a person standing out and being trustworthy and authentic and genuine, so that you virtually are the talent magnet that people are contacting you in order to partner with you so that you can assist them to find their next career move. And I think people don't realize that. I think there's a lot of recruiters who still have the mentality of, oh, you know, as you're known as, you know, the ugly redheaded stepchild of the HR department. And they don't realize the importance of what they're doing. They really are changing lives. And until recruiters start taking themselves seriously and start being a trusted, valued partner to business, we're just going to keep perpetuating the cycle.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, successful recruiting is as much about building pipeline these days, both on the agency side as a niche recruiter and on the corporate side,
yes,
where it's important to share your talent brand as early on in the recruiting process as possible.
Absolutely.
Don't you think that that's critical to the future of recruiting, really building pipeline and not just transacting candidates today for roles that you want to fill today?
100%. And that's what is going to make your life as a recruiter or a sourcer easier. That when the role comes in, it's not so reactive, like, oh my gosh, I need C-sharp developers. Where am I going to start looking? I'm looking from scratch. But if you had been nurturing a community, you'd been holding meetups at your offices, you'd been giving back, you'd been nurturing and helping, you know, youngsters to maybe develop in that space, you would have 5 or 6 or 7 developers that you could choose from in order to fill that role.
Right.
So it actually, at the end of the day, it's going to make your life easier, isn't it?
So you've really got to get ahead of the curve.
Totally.
You've really got to recruit for the future. And you've got to partner with, if you're an internal recruiter, with all your internal stakeholders so that you can understand their sort of like hiring roadmap for the rest of the year or the next 100%. 6 months or a year, so that you can begin to build that pipeline.
Absolutely.
But what that doesn't do, it doesn't prevent you from stressing out about the roles you need to fill today. And that's, I feel like, one of the biggest problems in recruiting is that a lot of recruiters are just pressured into, no, we need these roles filled today. Go and find more people for today.
Absolutely.
And how much leeway are they actually given by their employer to go and build these critical pipelines? Because it's so much easier to place a candidate that you sourced 6 months ago and with whom mm-hmm. you've built some kind of relationship than it is to go out today and transact somebody that you've never spoken with before.
Absolutely. And does this not highlight the need to separate a talent acquisition team into a sourcing function and a recruitment function? Because then the sources are going to have more time to focus on building those talent pools and those communities.
I couldn't agree with you more.
So I think that by doing that, it actually makes incredible business sense. But you're right. Everyone always seems to be on the back foot when it comes to recruiting. It's always like you get those like panic moments as soon as the new role descriptions hit anyone's inbox, because it almost seems like it's a surprise.
Do you feel like transactional recruiting, you know, hunting for someone to fill the role today, is getting harder and harder as brands and agencies like search for more ways to differentiate themselves?
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, what's becoming a massive issue from a global perspective is the scarce skills. So transactional recruiting isn't going to help because the skills just aren't there. I mean, I was listening to a very interesting podcast this morning when I went for a run, and it was around how even companies in the States, even though you're experiencing massive unemployment rates at the moment, you know, due to COVID, but it's still difficult to find those scarce skills. So I think transactional recruitment coupled with scarce skills, it's actually just going to result in a lot of recruiters leaving the industry or just suffering from chronic burnout because it's not doing anyone any favors. No one wins in this situation.
No, they don't. And the reality of transactional recruiting, trying to fill a role today with somebody you've never spoken to before, is that you're really only dealing with active candidates because the process of identifying and reaching out to a passive candidate and then building the necessary relationship and then sharing your brand, that all takes quite a long time.
Absolutely. But it's almost like a dating game. I mean, if you think about it, you've got to seduce your passive talent. You've got to woo them. You know, you've got to, I mean, they don't want to leave where they are. They're probably on a good wicket. So they could actually have more benefits for them or whatever it might be. So you've got to have to take your time to really prove to them that you're serious about pursuing them. Yeah. And really proving to them what a great company you are. And that is definitely not something that happens overnight. But putting your recruiters under unnecessary pressure makes them more pushy on the candidate. And as the internal recruiter or agency recruiters acting as the brand ambassador for that company, you could lose a candidate for life. They could turn around and say, I'm not interested in ever dealing with that company again, just because of the way that they were treated.
That's the problem, because it invokes the need for you to reach out to candidates and ask them if they're interested today.
Yeah.
And if that elicits an immediate no, the relationship is dead.
Yeah.
Because as soon as a candidate hears themselves say no, they pretty much want to move on from that conversation.
Absolutely.
And so a great recruiter doesn't put themselves in a position to hear no at the beginning of a conversation. You know, they spend more time talking about what the candidate's doing and what the candidate might want to do in the future than they do about what the recruiter wants to do or what the position is that they're looking to fill, because otherwise you'll never cross the bridge from complete stranger to trusted advisor.
Absolutely.
And that's where you need to be, by the way, if you're ever going to sort of impact change on a candidate's behalf.
Absolutely, which also leads into your online brand. How can you be a trusted advisor if your online brand is shocking and you don't look like someone who's worthy of a candidate's time or trust?
Absolutely. Let's talk strategy just for a moment here, because, you know, as we've now discussed, sourcing is a lot more than just putting a bunch of profiles in a folder. What does an effective sourcing strategy look like today? If you sat down with a client or an agency owner and said, look, let's talk sourcing strategy, what are your top tips to really sort of build this kind of an approach that we've been talking about?
So definitely get ahead of the curve. For me, it's about actually knowing your audience. So what we're seeing as a global sourcing recruitment trend at the moment is, I'll use South Africa as a prime example. We've got a lot of really good technical developers here. We really do. But South Africa is one of those countries where it's actually quite difficult to leave. So people can't immigrate that easily from here. So what I'm seeing a lot of happening is that international companies are approaching developers. And since instead of actually having to approach their governments and get visas and sponsorship and all of those things to relocate South Africans to their countries, they're leaving South Africans sitting here at home, and they're employing them to work for, say, a US-based company. So it's a win-win situation. I mean, the developer gets to stay in the beautiful country of South Africa. We've got one of the best standards of living here. And they get to earn a foreign currency, US dollar, which is incredibly strong compared to the South African rand.
And is that a reality? Have you suddenly seen, have you suddenly seen this starting to happen in South Africa?
Absolutely. So I'm being approached by a lot of US and European-based companies to look for talent that wants to stay here in the country but want to work for international businesses. And it really is a worry. You know, it's because, as it is, you know, South Africa doesn't have a very strong pool of technical specialists. We live in a country where, from a political, socioeconomic perspective, things aren't always that stable. So there are a lot of people who at any given time are potentially looking to immigrate. So, you know, your average South African doesn't need more than a little bit of a nudge to actually, you know, start working for an international brand in the hope that maybe one day they could immigrate. So for me, the big thing is that from a sourcing strategy perspective, that I am getting somewhere with the sourcing strategy, I promise you, is that we need to actually keep up with global trends. And that's for any company anywhere in the world. And I think what we need to realize is that it used to be a perk or it used to be a benefit for people to work from home. But now the whole world is working from home. So what we need to do is, from a sourcing strategy perspective, is we need to kind of open our minds to gig economy, using contractors, and realizing that talent could actually be sitting anywhere in the world. So my advice to people who are recruiting at the moment would be to try and build global talent pipelines and global communities of top developers. So my strategy would be to get people to get onto whatever social platform they prefer or multiple social platforms and start trying to position their business as an employer of choice and an employer that, how should I say this, is fair to people and to give them what they want. Because at the end of the day, especially in the tech space, talent is scarce. I know that developers are not the easiest people to always try and deal with, but you kind of need to, how should I say this, meet them halfway with their demands. And I think that you can do that by building a community and building a global brand around yourself. Like, there's a lot of very big companies based all over the world, but especially here in South Africa, people have never heard of them. Unless you're a Google or you're an Amazon or you're a Microsoft, why would people want to work for your business? And I think that a lot of the branding that companies are doing and a lot of sourcing is around your employer branding is actually needs to be on a global scale. And that's the mindset that people need to take.
Yeah. And that's an interesting point that you make, because working from home has completely changed the game, because now companies, they've always resisted. In America, corporate America has always resisted working from home.
Corporate South Africa too.
Because they want you in the office. They want you in the office. They want you being busy. They don't want you, you know, going out for lunch for more than an hour. And then they want you to play the game of, you know, who can stay the latest to prove they're the keenest on their job. But we've kind of crossed the bridge to a certain degree. I mean, there are lots of companies who can't wait to get their employees back. And there's plenty of people out there, by the way, who can't wait to get back to work. Mm-hmm. But working from home is something we talk about all the time, has now changed the sourcing sort of world, or turned the sourcing world upside down, because now companies are thinking, wow, okay, we've crossed the bridge. Let's start looking at talent around the world, nationally, in the United States, not just here in San Francisco or wherever your company is located, but nationally across the US. And there's a lot more financial benefits to companies hiring outside of some of the big metropolitan areas. And there's some huge financial benefits for companies hiring internationally, I should imagine, in places like South Africa and lots of other countries where the talent is rich. And also, it might be good for South Africa as well, because then people will start thinking, well, I can work from home for an American company. I don't need to worry about sort of emigrating there to keep my job. It might be good for the economy in South Africa.
Absolutely, because then we're getting the foreign exchange coming into the country and people are spending it here. But there's so many benefits to this. I mean, you literally could have a 24-hour workforce.
Yeah, that's a brilliant idea.
And I mean, you can just corner like all of the time zones. So my biggest advice would be, from a sourcing strategy perspective, is look global and position yourselves as a global company, because you really shouldn't have to see your employees every day to make sure that they are working. If you're taking on people who are gig workers, contractors, it's very easy to say, okay, you haven't delivered on what we said that you would deliver over the last month. We're terminating your contract, or we're not extending it, whatever it might be. And people are going to learn on both sides very quickly that you've got to deliver in this kind of setup. And if you don't, you're actually going to have to be spending a lot of your time looking for new projects.
I mean, there's probably a bunch of other challenges that we haven't touched on here today and probably don't have time for either, in terms of like HR law around the world that might impact this sort of approach. But the other thing that occurs to me right now is, it's a little bit mind-blowing for recruiters and for sourcers to think, wow, I can now source from anywhere in the world, instead of just sourcing within a 50-mile radius or a 15-mile radius in some places. I can now source within, you know, anywhere in the world, anywhere globally.
Absolutely.
Now that opens up a can of worms, because it actually forces you to become a much more precise sourcer and recruiter. and look for the sort of exact skill set. And that opens up another can of worms, because what is an exact job description? But anyway, a lot of challenges ahead for sourcers and for recruiters who are looking to start to recruit globally.
But on the flip side, it's really exciting.
Yeah, on the flip side, it's very exciting.
I mean, let's face it, if you couldn't find, for example, I'm based in Johannesburg. You know, what am I looking for at the moment? Node.js developers. What's half of the world looking for at the moment? Node.js developers. If there's none in Johannesburg, you know, I can't suddenly create a cloning machine to make more. If there was none, there were just none. I would run out of options. But now if someone says to me, actually, this person can be sitting anywhere in the world, it makes my job easier. My fishing pond just increased 100-fold.
By the way, is the sourcing community deep and wide in South Africa? Are there plenty of good sources to be had in South Africa if American companies want to come to South Africa and hire locally?
So put it this way, I am, after attending that first SourceCon in Budapest, which was in June 2018, I actually came back to South Africa and I started a sourcing community. So we've actually got a group on Facebook called SourceCon South Africa. And we started off with 0 members. And I actually checked today, we're sitting on 1.2 members.
How many members have you got now?
1,200.
Oh, 1,200.
Yeah, which is good. And that's, you know, sources and recruiters. And it's something that's new. I mean, I would say sourcing's maybe only been a thing for 2 or 3 years in South Africa. But yeah, I would totally say that there's good sources sitting here in South Africa.
Interesting. I think a good segue into the next part of the conversation is what you were saying about building this online brand in order for you to sort of position yourself as a strong contender for talent around the world. And I know it's something that you're very passionate about, is building a strong and trustworthy online brand beyond just shining up and polishing your LinkedIn profile. What does that actually look like?
So to be honest with you, I often share this story, and that's that I launched my business 1st of April, 2019. Okay. Good idea to launch a business on April Fool's Day. I thought so, you know, that's what I did. But one thing I must say, we're coming up to my 2-year anniversary, and I'm still very proud of the fact that I haven't had to cold call for business. And I've managed to bring in all of my training clients, all of my sourcing projects through my online brand or my online presence. So what I've done is I've tried to bring myself out online. So, you know, as opposed to sharing other people's posts or sharing other people's articles, what I post online is always something that something that's happened to me. I can share, I'm sharing ideas with people, collaborating with people, et cetera, et cetera. So for me, the building the online brand on social media, and you can choose which platform you do this across on, or you can do it across several, is just, it's almost like taking your whole self to work. It's like putting your whole self onto these platforms and just sharing with other people, because not everything's perfect all of the time. And I think sharing our successes, sharing where we went wrong, helping people out stands you in good stead. I mean, you spoke about it earlier. You spoke about, you know, having that thought leadership, that trusted advisor status on these social platforms. And for me, it's just been such an important part of my business. I mean, I'm a one-woman band. I don't have a whole marketing team behind me or a finance team or anything like that. But just by keeping top of mind, by posting regularly on social media, I mean, not only have I made lots of friends in the sourcing and recruitment space, but I've also been asked to present at international conferences, do webinars like this. I mean, Marcus, if you think about it, that's how I met you. Mark Cohen, who was one of your previous guests, you posted that he was a guest on your webinar. I listened to the webinar. I reached out to you just to say, hey, I think you did a great job chatting with Mark. You know, I'm definitely going to be following your podcast. And that led to us having further discussions. So I think just by using social media in that way, being human has really helped me to grow my business.
I completely agree with all of that. I'm not the best practitioner yet, although I'm starting to get a little bit better.
I'm sure that this podcast is helping you to get a lot better.
Yeah, but then I get to the point where I want to promote the podcast, and that's where I've been tripping up a bit. And I'm very fortunate to have an excellent sponsor in recruiter.com. So that's helped me build my brand.
I love recruiter.com. They're really good.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
Big shout out to the guys at recruiter.com for sponsoring this podcast. But what do people need to post? Because You're building a brand because you want something. Ultimately, you want something from your community. But there's a big difference in asking for something and giving something to your community. And social media is all about giving rather than taking, isn't it?
So yes.
What kind of posting and what kind of content do you think resonates the most? And what percentage of this content that you produce can be an ask as opposed to a give?
Very good point. So Marcus, just to answer that question, then I actually want to talk about your branding and your podcast. Is what I like to go is I like to work on a ratio of, say, 7 or 8 gives to 1 ask. So it's difficult because I don't count the number of posts, but I kind of like to think to myself is that I'm going to ask for something once every second week. So I'll give you an example. For the first week, I'll do my social media posts and I'll share things. Maybe I'll share an interesting article, something that I've discovered, a new site to source on, sharing an experience, sharing that I'm speaking at a conference. It's free to register. Here's the link, et cetera, et cetera. And then at some point in the second week, one of my posts, and this is mainly talking about LinkedIn, would be, hey, by the way, I'm working on this role. This is what I'm looking for. If anyone can assist me with this or knows anyone who would be interested, please give me a shout. And I think that that's a good ratio. That ratio kind of works for me, but I'm not going to say that it's cast in stone and it's going to work for everyone. But I completely agree. I mean, having a good social media presence and an online brand is more about what you're giving away to other people as opposed to being about yourself. And that's what people need to realize. So for me, there's nothing worse than watching a recruiter get onto a platform like LinkedIn and all they do all day is post role descriptions of what they're looking for. That's not the correct way to be using it.
Yeah, I mean, people keep telling me this. It's an engagement tool.
Yes.
And somebody said to me yesterday, I saw on a post on LinkedIn, stop selling on LinkedIn. And so I think the ratios need to be, 7 or 8 to 1 or even more in terms of what you give to what you ask.
Yeah.
You have to build an audience and you have to build trust before you can actually sort of pull money out of the bank, so to speak.
And absolutely. And you've got to think about your audience and your community. Like now my focus is recruiting teams from a global perspective because that's where I want my business to go. But for 10 years prior to starting my own business, my focus was IT professionals. So you've got to make sure that your community that you're reaching out to, you are adding value to them. And that's a big reason why I started that SourceCon South Africa group on Facebook is I did a group because it's more of a community feel than a page. But also I can add value by posting interesting articles about sourcing on that group.
Fantastic. People keep telling me that video is the engagement tool of the future. But to be honest with you, I tried it. I published like 15 or 16 weekly videos and they were pretty good promoting this podcast, with limited success outside my sort of immediate circle of followers. Where does video fit into all of this?
Sure. No, that's a very good question because you say that video is the tool of the future. I think video is the tool of the current. So stats show, if you do any reading about social media, video is the most highest consumed content on the internet at the moment. Interestingly enough is that most video is actually consumed with sound off. So if you are going to be posting video, you need to be putting subtitles in these days, I believe. And I do agree with you. Everything that you read these days is use video. It shouldn't be longer than a minute, et cetera, et cetera. I'm sorry that you didn't have a good experience, with doing the video yourself, but I think that you need to be a certain person in order to be engaging when it comes to doing videos out there. And I don't think that it's for everyone. And I'm not saying that you're one of those people.
Mine were really good, even though I say so myself.
I'm sure they were.
The people who saw them liked them. But the trouble is you're fighting with the LinkedIn algorithm. Unless you get sort of 15 or 16 likes or comments inside the first 2 hours, apparently, LinkedIn only share your content with a very small percentage of your first degree connections and nothing beyond that. And so it's sort of like chicken and egg. You've got to get to sort of celebrity status on LinkedIn to get this stuff shared across a broad community.
Absolutely. But that's how the LinkedIn algorithm works with any kind of content. It doesn't even have to be video. So, a good thing that I do is when I do post on LinkedIn even as the author of the post, when people comment, you need to go and comment too, because that helps to kind of boost the algorithm and push the post into more people's news feeds.
Right.
I mean, it's a whole science, you know, in itself, and talking about LinkedIn. Where I have used video is actually candidate outreach. So putting together, you know, short videos, talking specifically to candidates, personalizing the message and sending it off via a platform, you know, like a LinkedIn or email or something like that. That's worked really well for me in the past. But I'm not a massive fan of my own videos. And I don't know whether that's because I'm quite highly critical of myself.
Nobody likes seeing themselves on video.
No, exactly. I'm thinking I'm having a bad hair day, or, you know, I'm not looking my best, or it's winter and I'm very pale. You know, all of these things that that women are going to think. I don't know. Maybe I'm being my own worst enemy. Who knows?
Yeah, I'm still yet to sort of reach that critical moment where I go, yes, this works. listen, Vanessa Rahe, thank you so much for coming on Recruiting Trailblazers. It's been a fantastic conversation. And obviously, we're going to keep in touch and I will speak to you again very soon.
Excellent. Marcus, thanks for your time. I've loved it. Thank you very much.
Okay, cheers.
Cheers.